I'm Perry, and this is actually going to be our final live optical show. Maybe I'll do a few others during the year, but I need to get a little of my life back after spending many Wednesdays doing this. And to conclude, we're going to have David talk about blue light, and we're going to debunk a lot of stuff. We're going to go through it very systematically, and David's going to share his blue light or just light experience going all the way back probably to the 70s and 80s dealing with light in his own retail store even. With that being said, David, I'll let you introduce yourself, give maybe your short background, and we'll just hop right into it.
But before we begin, you know I'm all about efficiency and profitability and systematizing things in your businesses, and I just launched a medical insurance verification service. Those deductibles, those copays that you just have trouble finding, those out-of-pocket maximums and co-insurances, my team collects all that for you before the exam, perhaps a week before, depends how far your schedule is booked out, and the cost goes anywhere from about $1.35 to $4 for this service, and you buy the verification service in batches. It's not a full-time staff member. You just purchase credits for me. So let's say you do 200 medical verifications a month, or you do 600. I build a program for you, and you're essentially buying a fractional employee who may be only working 3 to 10 hours a week. Really will be a game changer to boost your revenue collections at the time of service. You can schedule a consultation with me about your specific needs, how we will pair with your EHR, how we'll access all your plans in a very HIPAA-compliant way.
Yo, yo, my name is Perry Brill. Entrepreneur, yeah, it's a big deal. We talk about all things eye care because I care about eye care technology. I wear so many revolutionary things in eye care, tech startups and innovation, the coolest eye care stuff in the nation.
Are you an eye doc or an optician?
Doesn't really matter cause we cooking in the kitchen. Yeah.
So my name is David Salk and I'm an optician and also on the wholesale side of things, but I've been in the optical business my entire adult life and part of my non-adult life. I opened up my retail practice in Berkeley in 1976 in January. So this January, we'll be celebrating year number 47. My interest in the subject really started back in during that period of time because there was a scientist by the name of Dr. John Ott who many of you may have heard of before, some of you may not have, but John was a consultant to Disney for a number of years, and he specialized in doing a lot of time-lapse photography, studying how plants developed and how they grew and how they moved towards light. And he became acutely aware of the impact of lighting on people and nature. And so with that in mind, he consulted with a company and they actually designed a fluorescent light that was called Vitalite. And the idea of Vitalite was to provide a balanced light spectrum so that when people worked, it was kind of creating a more natural environment for them because people who were working under fluorescent lights, the yellow pink kind, were experiencing a lot of mood issues, trouble sleeping, variety of things. And they found that by changing the color spectrum of the light, that some of those problems resolved. And so we used those lights in our store, and that was back in 77. So anyway, I became involved on the wholesale side of the optical business, inventing and developing a product called Eclipse, which was for making custom clip-ons, rimless ones. And then fast forward to, you know, the late, 2015, 2016, I started doing some work with Blue Tech and kind of revisiting the whole issue of the blue light issues. And learning more about it, as it relates to the use of electronic devices and trying to figure out what made scientific sense, what didn't, what all the claims were. And that kind of then led me to do my own research and develop my own lens. There's still a lot of background noise coming through.
There we go.
There. And develop my own lens, which we'll talk about later. But what I really wanted to talk about with you, Perry, and with everybody here was just there's been so much confusion generated by, in many respects, by the optical industry itself because of marketing narratives that I thought it would be helpful to kind of rewind the tape a little bit and kind of start from how do we build our awareness of the issues? How do we look at the science that's out there? Because there is a lot of good peer-reviewed science outside of the optical industry that's available. And then once we kind of understand what the facts are in terms of the science, whether it's about what constitutes harm or doesn't constitute harm, what affects sleep, what affects vision, and so forth, then the question is, how do we evaluate the different products that are on the market? And I have some tools what we can demonstrate a little bit, the photospectrometer, so that people can actually see that it's possible to measure some of these lenses and determine exactly what they do and then figure out how that fits with creating good solutions for patients. So that, in a nutshell, is my background. I'm always available, interested in talking to people if they have specific questions, but suffice to say, I've been in the optical business my whole life and enjoy the process of learning and then sharing that information with other people.
Sounds good. So just to begin, I kind of want to give a little visual of your retail location so we can understand who you are and what you do. So let me share my browser real quick. Can you see my screen? Is this your location here?
That's it.
Okay. So you're in Berkeley, California, and you opened up in your 20s, early 20s, right?
Mid 25.
25. Okay. And so David is a practicing optician. He understands the market. He isn't just some guy who popped up overnight and decided, hey, blue light is my thing. And there's your nice product. Looks like this is funny. This is Golden Wood, which is no longer.
Yeah, that picture is pretty old.
Yeah, no worries. Anyway, so that's the background here. So I'm curious, in the chat, can you guys please put what blue light product you prescribe to your customers currently? Let's kind of get a tally here so we can understand what's going on in the market. So I'm a UV +++ fan until today, probably. And UV +++ is a clear blue light lens, fairly clear. There's probably a little residual color. Okay. Dave Butler likes Provincia, likes the purple mirror. Blue Tech, Provincia. Okay. We got some blue logic. Okay. Whatever lab uses. Yeah, that's a really good answer. Actually, I like that one because now we have to hold the lab accountable for cutting through the BS. Hoya Recharge, Josh says, and thanks. This is a wonderful turnout. I can't believe this. We have 40 people here. Thank you so much for being here. This is awesome. And anytime, if you want to keep muted, please. But if at any time you do want to unmute yourself, just interrupt us and you can ask questions. Okay, so let's begin here from the top of the hour. What is blue light? Why should we be concerned about it or not concerned?
Right. So I don't want to presume that everyone here is familiar with how to look at the color spectrum. So if Perry, if you have that first slide.
Yeah, put up. Sure.
So the best place to start is with the visible light spectrum itself, which goes all the way from ultraviolet, right? This is the visible light spectrum. And so we're only going to concern ourselves with the far left-hand side of the spectrum.
Let me switch this to my other screen here.
Okay.
I got this stupid pop-up that was glitching on me.
Sure. Let's see here.
Okay. There we go.
Okay. So here's the visible spectrum, right? And I think most, if not everybody here, has probably seen this before, but just in case, this is what the visible spectrum looks like in terms of wavelength. What we're going to focus on tonight are the wavelengths from approximately 400 to 500. We're going to leave everything from green all the way up to red, infrared. We're going to leave all of that out of the conversation. So now that we're going to look at the blue light spectrum, the question is, when people talk about blue light, they often make it sound like, well, we filter blue light. Well, but from my perspective, and I think the science supports this, we should probably look at talking about different sections of blue light. We should understand that blue light is consisting of the high energy visible light, which is commonly referred to as HEV, which is between 400 and 430 nanometers or so. We can argue plus or minus five nanometers, but between 400 and 430 is the HEV or non-visible light. But it's not visible, but it definitely affects our vision. Then we talk about the wavelengths of light on the other end of the blue light spectrum, which is between 460 and say 490, which is definitely visible. And this relates to our sleep-wake cycle. So these wavelengths of light are visible. When we see those wavelengths during the day, they help keep us alert. But at night, that same visible light can work against us in terms of it adversely affecting our sleep cycle. So whenever we see, for example, one of the marketing things that I often see is our lens, you know, filters the harmful blue light, but we let in the beneficial blue light. And, you know, you have to ask yourself the question, where are these adjectives coming from? Because where, first of all, what is the harm? And that's a very important question to answer, because the real harm comes from being outside in the sun. That's the known harm in terms of blue light. But more importantly, are the longer wavelengths of blue light beneficial all the time? And the answer is they're not. They're beneficial during the day if you're wanting to maintain alertness, but at night, they're definitely going to adversely affect sleep for many people. Not everybody, but for many people, looking at an electronic device late at night before bed is definitely going to compromise your sleep cycle. So
David, just to, you know, we mentioned, you know, these companies have marketing materials. If we're looking at the major lens manufacturers, who is actually doing the product development within these organizations, and how is the lens materials or the tints or whatever they're using being vetted?
Wow. Well, that's a very good question. I'm not sure that I'm qualified to address how each company is doing its own work. I do think that there is too close of a relationship, in my opinion, between the marketing departments of these companies and the research and development arms of these companies. I think that oftentimes companies decide what they need to market, what they need to sell in order to make it popular, rather than taking the position of, this is what the science says, we're going to educate people about the science, we're going to sell products, and we're going to inform them as to what they do and what they don't do.
Yeah. I think that goes back to the foundations of opticianry and the standards we set with ANSI, and having certain disclaimers that exist. And David, we were talking earlier, you know, this is an exaggeration, but when you go to Europe and you buy a pack of cigarettes, it has all these crazy images of cancer in the mouth and stuff like that. And they're trying to at least warn you about the science.
Right.
Not that we need to go to that extreme with this, but there has to be some standard we adhere by.
Well, and we'll get to this a little bit later in more detail, because when we actually measure some lenses, but you know, to make it simple, it is very easy to measure what a given lens material or coating does to the light spectrum that passes through it. It's very easy to quantify it. You can quantify it every 5 nanometers. You can quantify it every 10. You can choose. But it would be very, if we can figure out how to put the amount of sugar and calcium on a cereal box, we can certainly figure out how to put a QR code on a lens package or a little insert in a lens that you get that claims to block blue light, and you flash your phone at it and basically pops up like a menu in a restaurant, the information that shows you exactly what the lens does and what it doesn't do. But, you know, the optical industry seems to be not eager to do that.
Yeah.
And I think it does have to do with the fact that they'll talk about the sleep issue, which is kind of the elephant in the room, in my opinion. And they know that in order to address the sleep issue, you have to wear a lens that has color in it. There's no way around it. You cannot filter those longer wavelengths to any significant degree without having a tint.
Okay, let's stop there. I think it's the most profound thing we just said so far. Not so he just to reiterate, a clear lens cannot have the properties to block blue light and do all the things the marketing thing says. So does anyone have questions about that? That a clear lens cannot do what they say it does?
With the longer wavelengths.
Okay, with the longer wavelengths, which would be in what, and define again, what is that wavelength? What nanometers?
Well, the wavelengths from 460 to 490, if you're going to attenuate, and I'm going to use that word regularly, attenuate means to reduce, right? If you're going to reduce those wavelengths above 460, the lens has to have color.
Okay.
Now, below that, if you're dealing with the glare from a computer screen, like you talked about UV++, excellent product if you're just going to deal with the short wavelengths below 420. Mm-hmm. You can have a clear lens, and that will provide you with some protection.
Yeah. So before we move to the next topic, let's talk about the products on the market, because I think that'll help stem the conversation for later. So we have, let's begin with the coatings that came out in the past 5 to 10 years. And yeah. I see it all on all the optical forums. People are like, oh, which blue light thing do you want? Oh, I like this one because it blocks 15%. And it's like, okay, 15%, is that good? Is that bad? What? How do we quantify protection or for the use case even?
Right.
So talk to us about the coating first.
The simple answer is that the early products that were developed for addressing blue light were things like Prevencia and Recharge, and then Zeiss came out with Blue Protect, and then other private label lens companies have come out with lenses. And basically what these coatings are is they're essentially very much similar to a flash mirror. In other words, they're not a true anti-reflective coating, because an anti-reflective coating does the opposite, right? An anti-reflective coating is designed to allow as much as possible through the lens. So what these lenses do is they are selective reflecting coatings. In other words, the materials that are deposited on the lens are designed to reflect a certain percentage of the shorter wavelengths of blue. And to the extent that they do, I've measured them. I can measure one while we're here tonight. They typically reflect about 20% of the shorter wavelengths of blue. Does it make a difference? For some people, it makes a noticeable difference. For others, it makes very little difference. And many people complain about the cosmetic appearance when they're on a Zoom call, and they have this very pronounced reflection coming off the lens rather than the non-reflection that they're used to with their regular lenses.
Yeah. Does anyone get complaints from patients about the blue light coatings being more pronounced from an aesthetic standpoint? Just let us know in the chat to say yes if patients do complain about the aesthetic appeal. So we have a question from Dr. Candy Moeller in Washington State. How about the Amazon crap out there? Yeah, so let's talk about that. The internet is flooded with white label blue light products. So I'll throw one under the bus because not good or bad. It is Felix Gray. They're a behemoth. They have developed a great e-commerce business from a marketing standpoint. And you could add all the other companies out there, and they've got away with murder essentially through, you know, these marketing ploys.
Right. But, you know, like I said before, any lens can be measured. I mean, I don't begrudge any company to be aggressive with their marketing or to be aggressive with their pricing, but let's test the lenses and actually see what the lenses attenuate and what they don't. And then what are they making claims of in their marketing narrative? And if all of those things line up, I say, bravo, right? The problem is that oftentimes there aren't specifics revealed. If you look from all the major lens companies, you'll see claims like, well, this new lens that we've got blocks three times more blue light than a standard lens. Well, if a standard lens blocks zero, how much is three times zero? Right? But yet this is the narrative that they're putting, right? Well, instead of actually saying our old lens used to block 20% and our new lens blocks 35%, they make a claim of it being relative to a product they introduced before or that's on the market that doesn't do much. So you kind of get hung up with the numbers and you're reading it going, well, if God, it sounds good. I mean, three times, four times, 300%, all of that sounds really interesting until you realize that it's being compared to something that didn't do very much in the first place.
Yeah. So let me ask this question. Blue light, whether, you know, I have my, when I go into my PC here and I type in night light, it turns on a little yellow filter, whether it's on my PC or my mobile device, and it feels good on my eyes.
Uh-huh.
And what matters more is if the patient says, David, you're the best optician, these lenses feel great, my eyes are relaxed, does it really even matter that the science is working or not working, as long as the patient reaction is positive?
Well, right. And that speaks to a whole other aspect of the conversation, which we didn't really talk about before, which is essentially how you demo things in your practice so that you can see firsthand how people respond. For example, and this is a little bit of a side trip from blue light, but I have a lot of plus powered clip-ons in my office, and I regularly try on low plus clip-ons over progressive lens wearers. And they absolutely love them, right? Because all of a sudden, their neck position, which used to be like this, comes down a little bit like this. And they're going, what did you do? And I go, I just raised the plus power up and made it more accessible. We can do the same thing with test driving these different lens products. You know, we can get some generic clip-ons and put them onto the glasses, let them sit in front of a computer screen, and just ask them, is it better with or without the filter? And my experience is that the majority of people really enjoy the reduced eye strain, the improved contrast, and just general comfort that they get when they have a filter in front of their eyes that's attenuating. Again, there's that word, the shorter wavelengths of blue that affect your vision and your glare and your contrast.
Mm-hmm. So we have a few questions here. I mean, we're going to get to this one, Candy. So how do you test the lenses? What instrument can we buy? So it's called a spectrometer. Do we just want to get that cat out of the bag now and demo that to go
Happy
through?
Or
you wanna, what's yeah. that? Okay. So you want to whip up the iPad here?
Yeah.
So we're going to show you a live test. And this is a product out of Italy. And you can buy it. It's I'm assuming, not inexpensive, but it's not.
Oh, it's it's fine. So let's do this. I'm going to take a standard CR39 lens. All right. Now, can everybody see this, where I'm pointing my finger over here?
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Much better.
Okay. So this is a very simple device. Anyone can learn how to use it in about 5 minutes. What it does is you can test either for blue light or you can do a general spectral analysis as well. So what I'm going to do first, I'm going to take a standard, this is CR39 with no AR, and just run it through so you can see how it tests. So we go to blue light first, and it'll say read, set, and exit. I always do a set first. And what that does is it takes the ambient light in the room and it just basically kind of calibrates it.
Okay.
Does that look better when I do that?
Yeah, we can see the little bars going up and down.
Okay, all right. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to put the lens in and we're going to read it. Okay, so what are we looking at here? On the far left, let me hold it.
That's 56%, I think.
Yeah, on the far left, the lowest range is 385. So you're seeing that 56% number. That's at 385 nanometers. So basically, this lens is not blocking all the ultraviolet. The next wavelength is 405. And you're seeing now that it's transmitting 86% at 405. So this lens is doing a pretty poor job of protecting the eyes from any of the shorter wavelengths of light. And then you can see above that, we're at 93, 94. So this is basically transmitting all of the wavelengths of blue light, pretty much.
And this is this a coating or is it embedded in the monomer?
This is a standard CR39 lens, uncoated.
This is just uncoated.
I just wanted to show this as kind of like an example of what we're often commonly using, all right? Well, not commonly using. I don't think I've sold one of these in months. But all right, so now we're going to go to...
So guys, when your lens rep comes in next time, you're going to show them this recording and ask them if they have this device in their car. They can prove it to you.
Okay, so this is a lens that's manufactured by, well, I'll mention the name. This is Hoya's Blue Block.
As in coating or some embedded material?
This is embedded in the material.
Okay.
And again, I'm calibrating it just to be on the safe side. I don't want to ever be accused of, you didn't recalibrate the machine before you did.
Is this their Phoenix or Trivex or just plastic?
This is 167. I have it both in Trivex and 167.
Okay.
So now we're going to, we've got the okay, and now we're going to read this lens. Whoops. I hit the wrong button, sorry. Sorry.
Take your time.
It always goes wrong when you're on the spot, don't it?
Always. So we're just going to set it again.
Chrissy wants to know, how much is the machine?
This machine is around $1,300.
Okay, so that's not definitely for a more laboratory usage than anything.
Right. I mean, let's put it this way. For my optical store, this device has paid for itself many, many, many times over again.
I agree.
When I take this out and show it to patients who are in the office,
right,
they get it immediately. But like I said, there's nothing like a visual. I'd much rather do this than hand them a brochure. Okay, so what are we looking at here? So now we're looking at a lens that is at 385, transmits zero. That's good. At 405, it transmits 5%. So you can pretty much say that at 400, we're probably getting no transmission. And then we're getting 65% transmission at 430. Now, as we're going to look at a Colts report in a little bit, which is basically a spectral curve visual of these lens charts, you could extrapolate and say that at 420, you're probably blocking 40 to 50%, which is pretty good. That's going to help you a lot with the glare. But as you can see, when you get up into the longer wavelengths of blue above 430, you're pretty much blocking no more than 8 or 9%. Okay? So this is a good lens for addressing the glare. And that looks quite well. Now we're going to take a look at, well, let's take a look at Blue Logic. So this is the lens that I've been working on. We're going to go back now and we're going to go to blue light and we're going to set it again. Okay. And now we're going to read this lens. Now what I want you to notice,
nice,
now with this lens is that you're getting excellent protection in the lower wavelengths because you're, again, at that 420 range, you're probably transmitting 30 to 40%. So you're blocking 60 to 70%, but you're also getting attenuation at the upper band of blue, which helps mitigate some of these intense longer wavelengths that interrupt sleep. Now, what a, my position and my strategy with regard to the longer wavelengths of sleep is you can't block it all, and you don't want to block it all because you wouldn't be able to see through the lens. What you're trying to do is to mitigate the amount of blue light that's blasting us at home, whether it's with electronic devices, whether it's with the high energy efficiency lighting in our kitchen, whether it's watching television, even the tensor lights that we have that we read by now. It used to be the screw-in light bulb that had a very warm, kind of warm white or yellow characteristic, which is much easier on the eyes. And now the lights that we read by have Kelvin ratings. It's another measuring that we use that are between 4,000 and 4,500, which is extremely bright and very heavy in the blue end of the spectrum. So even if you're reading a book in bed, which is a great idea to do before bed, instead of looking at your electronic device, you're still getting hit with a lot of blue light from the reading, from the illumination. So again, what we're trying to do with Blue Logic was to just soften and mitigate. You know, we want you to be alert during the day, but we're getting overkilled with the amount of light that's in our
life. Does anyone have questions about what they just saw with the spectrometry? Any clarification anybody needs, you can put it in the chat or unmute yourself. No question is too stupid, literally.
Yeah, you're please.
What's the name of that equipment?
This is called the UV Blue Light Spectrosphere, and it's manufactured by a company called Sios. And many of you probably are familiar with Sios because they're distributed through Santinelli, and they have a really nice collection of optical tools and supplies. And when I went to the booth a few years back, 4 or 5 years ago, I saw this machine and immediately went, oh my God, what is that? And they said, oh, this is a spectrometer. And I had some lenses with me, and I almost grabbed the one from the booth, but then I had to wait. But we've gotten a lot of use out of it. And as a demonstration tool, it's fantastic. I'm sure, you know, just to take 10 seconds, the blue light laser pens that you guys are probably familiar with in the offices, you know, nice little marketing gimmick, but really is irrelevant to the problem, because you can block blue light at 405, but at 410 and 415, you're still getting wavelengths that cause a tremendous amount of glare and contrast loss. And the laser pen won't do anything for that because it's calibrated specifically for 405.
In terms of the photochromic that are claiming to have blue light protection, can we address that?
Yeah, well, I mean, photochromic is basically, you know, unless it has residual color in it. Now, again, if you're starting off with the residual color that's in the lens, then you could attenuate some of the longer wavelengths of blue. But most of the photochromics that we're working with don't do that. I mean, I've got one here. I won't name names now. I don't want to get myself into trouble. So let's do blue light. We're going to set. And then we're going to put this in there. And then we're going to name this. So this is a brand new photochromic lens from one of the major companies. And they talk a lot about how it's really great against blue light and talks about sleep and all that. And what I want you to notice again is...
Oh, let me spotlight it again.
So, yeah.
There we go.
All right. So now I'm going to hold this up. And I want you to look at this. And I want you to see that very good in the ultraviolet. Then it jumps up quite a bit when it comes to the glare. It's only blocking 29% at 430 nanometers. And above that, it's doing very almost next to nothing. So, you know, but yet this particular lens has some marketing materials that talk about sleep and talk about, you know, a variety of things. And, you know, again, this is, Perry, this is where the confusion is. There's nothing wrong with having a lens that does what it does. The problem that I have is when the lens does one thing, but then the narrative doesn't fit what the lens does. And that's when I think people become, and I think rightfully so, people in our industry, opticians, optometrists, ophthalmologists, become suspicious of the whole blue light category. And that is very unfortunate because there's a tremendous amount of really great science out there for people to study. And I do want to mention, while we're on the subject of science, there is a website called PubMed, P-U-B-M-E-D. You can Google it. And you can go on PubMed, and there are literally hundreds of thousands, I think I may be wrong, it's probably millions of articles, many of which are almost all peer-reviewed. And you can type in blue light sleep, blue light retina, blue light, any topic that you're interested in, and you will get a listing of anywhere between 50 and 300 articles. Now, I understand there's a lot to go through. And one of the things that I've done is I've culled through a lot of that material, and I put together kind of like my greatest hits of the articles that I've seen. And I'm always happy to share those. And then if you find others that you think are interesting or, you know, relevant, by all means, you know, go for it. I mean, there's hundreds of articles that I haven't read that I'm sure are really good. But there's a lot of information out there that just basically shows unequivocally what the mechanisms are when people are exposed to the shorter wavelengths, how it affects the crystalline lens inside the eye, how it creates accommodative lag, how it creates loss of contrast. And then on the flip side, there was this article, which you may have seen before.
Is that the Harvard
this
Business
is, Review? This is the Harvard study, right?
Not Harvard Business Review.
This came out in 2020. Yeah. And it's called Blue Light Has a Dark Side. And basically, the Harvard Medical School did a study specifically on the longer wavelengths of blue and how the longer wavelengths of blue suppress the production of melatonin, which is that sleep hormone, in your bloodstream. And not only that, could throw off your circadian cycle. And they found that even when a circadian cycle was thrown off by as little as a half an hour, that they could determine measurable differences in people's health, whether it was blood sugar, certain hormones that control appetite, blood pressure, you know, just a variety of things. So these little things really do make a difference, whether people tell you them or not, whether they come into your office and say, I'm bothered by it, they do make a difference.
So let's pivot the conversation to macular degeneration, long-term effects on our vision. Is it silly? You know, let's say I'm 15 years old and you're thinking, okay, why worry about my vision? I got 80 years to live. Like, do I really need to be concerned? Am I going to wear blue light the rest of my life? You know, that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, that's a really excellent question. And I think the answer is maybe we need to take a look at some of the examples of cumulative effects of things as guideposts, like, for example, wearing sunscreen and skin cancer, or smoking cigarettes and lung cancer. I don't know that we're going to find that there is a cumulative effect between sitting in front of a computer screen at a certain distance and retinal cell damage. Right. I don't know. I don't think anybody in our industry or in medicine can state unequivocally it's going to cause it. This is how much time it's going to take. And then you're going to start to see the drusen and you're going to start to see all these other problems. Mm-hmm. My point would be better safe than sorry. I think that protecting the eyes from the unknown, given that you've only got one pair, is probably a really good idea. But I don't think that we can draw a straight line between the use of a computer and and harm, actual harm to the retina. On the other hand, we can draw a straight line between being outdoors, where the outdoor blue light is 50 to 100 times more powerful, and retinal cell damage. So from that standpoint, we should absolutely make sure that people are wearing black, you know, sunglasses, prescription sunglasses, or clip-ons or whatever, just to protect their eyes from intense outdoor blue light. But you're asking the question, you know, my kids now are, you know, they're adults, and my daughter religiously wears her blue light filter all the time because she believes in the science and she wants to protect her eyes. And yeah, so, I mean, I think it's just, it becomes a personal preference thing, but I think better safe than sorry.
Okay. I'm going to pause for a bit. Now is the time for everybody to ask questions. So feel free to unmute yourself or put your question in the chat. Let's see if we can get 5 or 6 questions here to go over any myths. It could be product questions. Maybe it's how to have a conversation with a patient where they're, you know, asking you some type of technical question, anything like that. I'm going to wait patiently until we get at least a few questions. Can we get a link to that cult report? Yes, we can get you a link. And I'll probably just send that handout here, John, as well. If you don't mind, David, we can.
I'm happy to share the report. Okay. I did want to show. Let's see. So the cult report actually has two different pieces to it. So one part.
Do you want me to share it?
You can share it or I can just hold it up. What you'll notice is there's a bunch of numbers on the top. And what those numbers are primarily relating to is, Perry's going to share a screen. Okay.
Is it on here? The Colts?
Yeah, it's farther back.
Maybe it's not in here.
Oh, you know what? I think we didn't get that. So let me just hold it up.
That's fine.
Yeah. So this, you'll see that there is a bunch of numbers, and those numbers refer to the different wavelengths of light and what the amount of light transmission is. And then
can we back up for a second? Who the hell is Colt and what's this report?
Oh, well, Colts is I know the last part of it is lens testing. That's what the LT is, but I can't remember the full name.
But basically, what does the company or organization do for this industry?
The Colts Labs is the largest testing organization in the United States. Maybe they're even the largest in the world. I don't know. But basically, all the lens companies submit their products to Colts so that they can have a full report on every aspect of the lens. You know, it's important for sunglass manufacturers to have Colts reports to make sure that the lenses are compliant. In some cases, for driving purposes, it's important to have a Colts report because you have to make sure that you can differentiate between red and green, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. And some sun lenses will fail those tests. So,
report. Scratch resistance of anti-reflective coatings. I forgot what that exact measurement is.
Right. It starts with a B. Maybe somebody else here can weigh in.
Someone else can. Yeah. But when some new AR comes out from a company, you can look at the Colts report and that will tell you a lot of times certain qualities of the AR.
Right.
I knew Wesley would come in.
Bayer test. Bayer scratch test. There you go.
And how does that Bayer test occur? Are they like sandblasting it or do you know?
They take some sort of material and they'll rub it on the lens like a given number of times, like 10, 12,000, some crazy number. And basically, I don't know exactly what they're doing, but they test like how much it takes to like wear through the coating or damage it or whatever.
Okay, cool. That's exactly what I was looking for.
Yeah. So getting back to this, I just wanted to show that the numbers are on the top, but at the bottom, you can see the actual curve, which shows what the lens, you can actually see how the graph is changing as the nanometers are increasing. So even though when we're measuring the lens, we're getting, you know, at 405, it's this, at 425 or 430, it's this. You also want to know what the algorithm is in the lens of how it's getting from 405 to 430. Is it going in a relatively straight, even line, or is it jumping around all of a sudden? The smoother that transition is, the easier it is on the eye.
So Naventi wants to know, why are certain wavelengths more dangerous than others?
Well, there's two answers to the question. One is that the wavelengths that are dangerous in terms of the outdoor blue light, specific wavelengths are dangerous because they penetrate to certain structures in the eye where they can then activate certain adverse biochemical reactions that cause detriment to those tissues. Retinal cell ganglia, you know, there's like three or four different biochemical reactions that are taking place in the eye. And those wavelengths are stimulating or causing oxidative stress to those tissues. Just like we look at ultraviolet, we normally think of ultraviolet and we think of the cornea, right? We think of the lower latitudes and we think about how ultraviolet can affect, you know, things like pterygia, right? The deeper penetrating wavelengths then affect different structures.
Mm-hmm. So David, Marisol, hey Marisol, how are you? If you want to look at the chat and read her question, it's a little complicated to announce to you. I'll give you a second to read that.
Okay. When an adult is developing a trichoepithelioma. Wow. That's a good one.
BLF, blue light filter. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Diminished alertness with their circadian. Well, yeah, it's a great question because, of course, when you have a mature cataract, you're already getting quite a bit of yellowing and opacity in the lens. So the question is that already, and that's a good question. I would like to know more about that. To what extent do patients who have cataracts, are they less susceptible towards retinal damage when their cataracts are in late stage, as opposed to when their cataracts are in earlier stages or not at all? I would think you'd want to be mindful of that. I guess what I would say is that, you know, there's probably a published article about mature cataracts in terms of how much longer wavelengths of blue light are then transmitted to where the pineal gland is recognizing that signal and suppressing melatonin. My guess right off the top of my head is that a very mature cataract is probably acting as a natural blue light filter. But what do others think?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, I mean, that's just my knee-jerk reaction.
Chrissy has a good question. A lot of optometrists say that blue light filters are snake oil and don't help. What is a simple answer to combat that?
Well, I think first of all, when they say that, my question back to them is, what are you basing that on? Are you basing it on the fact that you've read these narratives from the lens companies and they seem to all contradict each other? Because that, I think, is a contributing factor to why people use the term snake oil. Anybody who has really tried a good blue light filter, and there are many of them, mine isn't the only one, but if you try something good and you sit in front of a computer screen, I think the vast majority of people notice improved comfort. I mean, they just do. I can't say we're into the thousands, but we're in the high hundreds, low thousands at focal point where we've done these demos with our blue light filters. And the vast majority, 85, 90% go, wow, that feels so much better. And then when I hold it up and then leave it on for 10 seconds and then take it away and they look at their computer screen, they go, oh my God, I had no idea I was dealing with this.
Mm-hmm.
So that if they have it demonstrated to them, they do that. In terms of combating the people who say it's snake oil, I would direct them to a couple of the articles that are peer-reviewed that are outside the optical industry and say, these are known either biochemical reactions in the eye or physical reactions dealing with, in the case of fluorescence, in the shorter wavelengths, the light that's coming in simply overwhelms the eye's natural ability. We have melanin pigment inside of our eye. And the purpose of that melanin pigment is in some cases to absorb excess short wavelength blue light. But with the amount of blue light that we're blasting our eyes with these days, we are overwhelming the natural ecosystem that our eyes have. So, you know, in a moment, how do you combat somebody who's dug in their heels and say, I think this is all bullshit? You may not be able to. You know, I think you have to direct them to some scientific articles. And then if you have a product that you can demonstrate for them and say, well, take a look through this. What do you think? You know, that's the best you can do.
So I want to talk about the tactical side to developing this little niche in your offices from a sales standpoint. So I think first, can we go through the blue logic lenses? Because I think most of us here, I've known about it since you developed them, but I think most of us here don't even know your product exists. And what is your differentiator in the market?
Right. So my primary, the foundation of my work is in clip-ons, because I believe that clip-ons can be an important adjunct to a pair of prescription glasses.
Can you hold one of your clip-ons up? These are artisanal clip-ons.
I'm wearing one, guys. I've got one on.
No shit, we can't even recognize it.
Okay. Right? So this is my regular pair of glasses, Kirk and Kirk.
Okay, someone was asking what you're wearing.
And then this is a low plus. This is a plus 50 Blue Logic clip-on.
Can you hold your frame a little closer to your webcam so we can see how it looks on your frame? Yeah, I can't even tell it's on there. It's amazing.
Right. So this is one of our clips. It's called Illusion. And the reason it's called Illusion is because we use a very thin memory metal wire to attach the lenses. And then we use the same.
Can you hold it closer and still get it to focus? So you can actually make these in your own office. You just drill them, or you can send them to David's Eclipse facility in California. They do a really good job with color matching and shape matching to the actual frame in lieu of some of the other products out there.
So our basic tenet, getting back to that, is that a clip-on can be a very useful tool for dealing with blue light. And the reason for that is a couple of things. Number one, I like to use the word light management, because I think that with blue light, you don't need to address it all the time. If you're out to dinner with your friends and you're in a candlelit restaurant, you don't need to be wearing the blue light filter for long wave blue light. But if you're sitting in front of your computer at 11 o'clock at night, you do. So a clip-on makes perfect sense from that standpoint. Number two is that a lot of the lens monomers, and this is something that you can look on the web and see, there's a great range of performance with the monomers. In other words, there's lenses like UV++ or TheraBlue, which is Luzern's lens. And if you go onto the Luzern Optical website and you look up their TheraBlue lens information, you will see that if you fit a patient with a polycarbonate version of TheraBlue, the lens will block 15% of a specific short wave of blue light. And if you order that same lens in 167, the performance jumps up to 40% filtration. So that's a pretty big jump in performance if you're selling to the patient across on the other side of the table and telling them that this lens is going to give you excellent blue light protection, but they want poly. And then in getting poly, they're getting substandard performance. Whereas if you put a clip-on over their lenses, you don't care what the lens material is. You don't have to worry if it's 174, 167, Trivex. You know the performance of the clip-on is going to be consistent regardless of what their prescription is. Plus, with a clip-on, as you can see, we can afford to be much more aggressive in filtering blue light because we're not concerned about this tint being worn all the time. So when we filter the shorter wavelengths of blue with Blue Logic, we achieve a roughly 70% average filtration below 430. there's nothing else in the market that comes close to that, because the lens companies are all trying to focus on selling clear lenses. So by definition, a clear lens is going to have a lesser performance. Now, does that make them bad? No. Does that make them perform well? As you've seen from some of the spectrometer reading, some of those clear lenses do just fine. So I'm not saying that our lens design is the only lens design. I'm just saying that with a clip-on, you can be a lot more aggressive. Plus, this clip-on's photochromic. So I can use my same clip-on that I'm using for daytime blue light, nighttime blue light. I can also use it for night driving because it transmits over 80% of visible light. And if I'm exposed to direct sunlight, this lens darkens and will block roughly 85 to 90% of those wavelengths that are known to be toxic. So, you know, it's a good solution in my opinion, but
yeah,
you know, obviously there are others.
I love, you know, I wish I thought about this earlier, but I love the idea of a Plano blue light clip-on, because I don't always, even with the clearest of the clear blue filters out there, there's still about 5-10% residual. You know, you look at a white wall, it's not white, and it bugs me.
Yeah, one of the reasons why we settled on this tint for some of the old timers that are on the call is I kind of based this lens color that I chose on the old Cruxite AX, which goes back.
Yeah, I know Crux.
Many years. Yeah, your dad probably sold a lot of Cruxite AX.
We have the only reason I know Crux is because you, when you're in practice for so long, you end up with tint samples for like 40 years. And I'm like, what the hell is this Crux thing, you know?
Exactly. And Crux, the thing about Crux and the reason why it was so popular is because when you put it on within 10, 15 seconds of when you put it on, you have pretty much natural color perception through the lens. You really don't feel like you're wearing a lens that's changing colors dramatically. And that's important. If you're going to wear any kind of a blue light filter, if it affects colors dramatically, you're going to get a lot of pushback. Mm-hmm.
So Navindi is asking, so does it reflect blue light or absorb it?
Okay, so this absorbs it. We have on the front surface of the lens, what we've done is we've put a little bit of blue reflex on the front, which just adds to a little bit of the performance of the lens. But primarily, we're interested in pushing all of it through. We do have UV++ monomer that we make in our lenses, so we're using that as well. And so to answer the questions, it's in the lens. So basically the light is being filtered or attenuated as it passes through the lens.
Mm-hmm. This is an interesting thing that Michael just said. He said his digital photo editors or photographers want nothing to do with anything that will affect their color perception.
Yep. Yep. I think that's a totally valid point. If they're doing professional work and they need to have absolutely perfect color without any, you know, just the slightest bit of a rose tint like what we offer, then they're much better off using a lens like UV++. Younger has a new lens. I just talked to Janet at Laramie K today. I'll give her a little plug. Yeah, she's fantastic.
Janet's on here. Hey, Janet.
Yeah. Anyway, a new lens that we're going to take a look at that looks like it blocks pretty much everything up to 420 and has a nice cosmetic appearance. But I think at the end of the day, yeah, I mean, if somebody's doing illustration or they're doing art and they want to have absolutely pure color rendition, then they need to have a lens that will accommodate that, provide that. Of course, they can do that with BlueLogic just by taking the clip off, right? If the regular pair of glasses has some kind of a blue light inhibitor in the material, and then you wear the BlueLogic clip for when you want to protect your eyes from doing the sleep and get a little bit more intense protection, you have the option of taking the clip on and off.
Yeah. You know, from a sales perspective, it's hard enough to sell multiple pairs of glasses. So if you can just sell the clear and say, look, for X, you know, $150, $200, whatever the custom clip is, you got blue light glasses. I think it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah. Somebody just asked about the affecting the monitors. I don't see why it would. I can understand where, you know, you get involved with polarizing filters and the birefringence that you get from looking at certain types of digital screens, but I haven't experienced any of that. But I, you know, I'd be interested in exploring that further if it seems to be an issue.
Yeah. Can you show the clip again? Someone's asking.
Oh, sure.
Who sells clips in their office? Just give me a yes. Custom clips, that is. Could be chemistry. It could be clip-on. There's some other providers out there. I sold a lot of clips, a lot. I at least sold one or two a day. Cool. Well, we're going to wrap it up here in maybe 10 minutes or so. Any questions? Fire away. Unmute yourself even. Put it in the chat. Now's your time to talk to the mad scientist here.
Maybe. Nobody's asked me about the guitar in the back
there. I know. We're waiting for you to give us a going away. Maybe you can give us a going away strum.
Well, I do my acoustic for that. My other passion in life is music, and I'm part of the group that does the benefit concerts at Vision Expo East. We've done iRock in the past and Rockin' for New Eyes. And both of those organizations are great. And so I play with other people who are in the optical industry, and we get together and once a year and perform, and it's a great deal of fun. So if you're at Vision Expo in New York, I hope you'll come and join us at the Hard Rock on Times Square. Let's see. Is there a link in the chat where I can order your clip design? If you go to my website, is www.clipon.com. And we have information about the current Blue Logic lenses that we carry. We're in the process of loading up new information about Blue Logic. This is Blue Logic 365, which is kind of going to replace the two current Blue Logic lenses, because we tried doing a daytime Blue Logic lens and a nighttime Blue Logic lens, and it just got to be too cumbersome for explaining to all the different ECPs. So we decided to go with one lens, designed it so that it really kind of splits the problem right down the middle and addresses it. Also, if you want more information about the spectrometer, I would recommend talking to Santinelli.
Can we email you if we have questions?
Sure.
You want to drop your email in the chat?
Yeah.
David's the type of guy that will, you just call him, he'll hop on the phone and chat with you for 30, 40 minutes and just...
Oh, don't do that. If my wife is listening to this right now, I'm dead.
Oh, no. Don't drop your number there. But
there you go. And the website is www.clipon.com. And the place for getting all that great information is PubMed. Mm-hmm.
So Christine Riccio, what is the ultimate goal with choosing blue light protection? From what nanometer to what nanometer?
Well, the ultimate goal is to address what the patient needs. For example, if I have a patient in my office and they say, you know, I'm not on my computer at night, I don't watch much TV, I like to read a book, I've got an old-fashioned light bulb, then you're really concerned with addressing the shorter wavelengths and concerned with addressing the outdoor wavelengths, right? Most people fall into the category of needing all the blue light wavelengths dealt with. And they're just different. That's why we broke it down into the three categories, because when you talk about blue light, you have to think about each section of blue light as being a unique problem because of the way it affects the eye. And one thing we didn't talk about, which I just want to mention very quickly, is there's some really fascinating articles about how all of the new street lighting that we have with these high energy, high output, low usage, but very bright lights are having a tremendously adverse impact on wildlife. I read a fascinating article about how birds, when they migrate, are actually being thrown off course, and it's having a very destructive effect on them. Plus, their sleep-wake cycles are being adversely affected. And as a result, there's reduced immunity in bird populations. They've actually seen more disease in areas in the cities where these lights have had an impact. So it's not just us. It's not just people who are affected by this. but it's also, you know, plants, animals, birds, you know, you name it. Probably not fish, but.
Yeah, and I'll put, I just put the link in there. You can read the article about, and so I'll give an example. I have light pollution right outside my house, and about 6 months ago, they installed these LED streetlights just on my little dead end here. And it's honestly really annoying. As much as I like the safety of having the light out there, it bleeds in my windows. It disrupts me at night. I have to have blackout curtains. And I think we can all relate to that, especially with the car lights and stuff.
So one of the things that I hope people will be taking away from this, regardless of Blue Logic, my lens products or not, is when you read literature from lens companies, is use this information to ask yourself, what are they really saying? What information are they providing me with? And what information are they not providing me with? If they start using things like, this does 3 times more or 4 times more than this, ask yourself, what are they comparing it to? And what claims are they making specific? They'll mention sleep. They'll say, blue light is known to cause problems with sleep, right? And our lens is a really good lens. And then they show a picture of a young person sitting in bed looking at their laptop at midnight. So they're implying, by drawing a line between all those different points, that their lens is going to help with sleep. But as we've talked about tonight, that's not possible. Right? If it's a clear lens, it simply cannot address those longer wavelengths. So that's my hope in all of this, is that when you're filtering through and looking at all the different things that are going to come at you today, tomorrow, next week, next year on this subject, and there'll be increasingly more, is having the tools in your pocket to be able to look at that and go, oh, I'm not so sure. Let me look at my PubMed site and see what some of the independent science has to say about it. I saw a really great article at Tulane University that was done by some, you know, people in the physics department. I'm not so sure about that. Be a skeptic. You know, I think a healthy amount of skepticism is needed to combat aggressive marketing companies.
Oh, shit.
You know?
Cool. Well, I think this was really awesome. I want to thanks, David, for laying this down. I think you make it easy enough, but technical enough at the same time. And it is hard to cut through the knowledge, or for like me, I read so much. The last thing I want to do is dig into PubMed. I'm not that guy.
Yeah. Well, I've got a folder of my, like I said, of my greatest hits. And I'm happy to share that with anybody. If you email me and send me your email address, I'll be happy to send you the folder, and it's got the links inside, and then you can go and check the articles out, and it'll give you a good start.
Okay, maybe we'll hit one Marisol question last. She said, have we had any discussion of research being done on filters and the adverse effects of
That's a great question. You know, there's a lot of studying being done right now about, you know, there's this whole issue of, you know, studying myopia progression. There's a lot of money and a lot of research going into that. And there's a lot of controversy about what are the impacts of all these shorter wavelengths of blue light. Does it cause the eyes to adapt in certain ways that could be adverse, that could be beneficial? We don't know. But that question is a great one. You know, there's research being done on the filters right now. I know that there's a lot of research being done in the area of studying how blue light may or may not be related to myopia progression, or if it's something that's going in the opposite direction. I've heard arguments made on both sides. That some people say, well, the kids are holding their screens close to their eyes and they're looking at all these short wavelengths of blue light. How is that going to pan out in 4 to 5 years? And the answer is we're about to find out. I think we're going to learn a lot the next few years on that topic. But it's a great question, Marisol.
Yeah. And then we haven't talked about this, but I'm not going to get into it. But you know, there's contact lenses today that have, I think from J&J, that have some type of blue light property or that they're claiming it. And, you know, that's also like, hey, yeah, is that good to be wearing that all day? I don't know.
Well, if they're clear, then they're probably putting something into the plastic that the contact lens is made out of that's doing something to attenuate the shorter wavelengths of blue light. Mm-hmm. So if it's clear and if it's helping with some of the glare, probably not bad.
Sure. You know?
As long as the claims aren't being made that you're going to sleep at it.
Okay. Nevin, they said it's not clear. So
yeah.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks a lot, everybody, for attending. And yeah, hopefully this was helpful. You're never going to get this education in the market. And so that's kind of why we'd like to have these huddles here where we can all just bang it out and talk about the technicals. So
yeah. And like Perry said, if after this, you have some questions that maybe occur to you in a week or a month, and you say to yourself, huh, you know, I just read this article, you know, fire me off an email. I don't know if I'll be able to get back to you right away, but I'll make an effort to dig in and try to answer your question.
Mm-hmm. And this will be available for replay, YouTube, podcast. So if you want to share it with your coworkers, things like that, highly recommend it so they don't think you're crazy when you're, you know, now not selling a certain product or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, no PubMed for John. All right, sounds good, everybody. Have an awesome night.
Thank you all for coming. Appreciate it.
Have you left a 5-star review for the iTrepreneur podcast yet? Your patients, your customers give your practices, your opticals reviews, and that's how traffic is generated to your location. Same thing for podcast. Please give me that 5-star review on Apple. I will hug you, send you virtual high fives, maybe some Hanukkah and Christmas gifts.